listening and welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget, you can go to the Facebook page or our own website, www.nagb.org.bs. And after the show has aired, you can click on a link. We're now posting the MP3s after the show. So if you just got in the car and are like, oh, I missed the beginning, darn. Or you are driving somewhere and you have to get out of the car and you're like, oh, I just want to stay in the car and listen to this awesome show. Just know that you can go back to the website afterwards and you can click on the link and you can listen to the show in its entirety. So I have three women in the studio with me tonight. I was interestingly looking at the list of the national exhibition, and we really have very, very strong female artists in the show this year, which is really interesting given everything we've been through this year in our country, or last year, I should say. And so we just spoke to Jordana Kelly before the break. She was speaking about her project, Discarded Pearls. And we are going to be hearing from Sue Katz, Lightbourne, and Dee Dee Brown. So, Sue, welcome to the show. And Dee Dee, of course. But now it's going to be Sue. Mm-hmm. So and you have a very strong piece called Remember, which is, so people that know your work will know that you work a lot with collage. You collect a lot of stuff, whether it's old magazines and bits and pieces and kitsch and kind of little buttons and postcards and and then you kind of normally make these assemblages. You've done collages of you know, still lives and portraits, cutting up these pieces of paper and magazines. And then actually for Bahamar, the piece that got commissioned and they bought was, I think, your first foray that you did for the NE6 into three-dimensional
the
collage.
The Wall of Angel?
Yeah.
That was my first assemblage.
And your first kind of 3D, large scale. Yeah. And this year in the NE8, you've done another quite large assemblage, which is a figure. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about what they'll see in this piece, Remember?
Well, it's a piece based on the Holocaust, and my initial idea for the piece was based on, I'm going to try not to get too political here, was based on the election and everything that was going on in the world at that time. There were a lot of terrorism attacks. There were every day I'd wake up and I'd hear something different from Donald Trump, and it was racist and biased and just ugly. And I thought, you know, I had wanted to do a Holocaust piece anyway, been mulling it over in my head, and I thought, you know, now was really the right time to sort of combine that with what I'm feeling about what's going on in the United States. And it's basically a piece. It's a three-dimensional piece, and it's a Holocaust. It looks like a dress.
Yeah, it looks like a dress. It looks like a little person, like a small person's dress, like a girl. Yeah, exactly.
It's done on a plaster form, and the dress itself is made out of the blue and white stripe fabric that they wore in the Holocaust on the concentration camps. And it's basically covered with images of people in the Holocaust, prisoners, you know, concentration camp signs. You know, just various memorabilia from that that period. And I also did an assemblage box, which is kind of like right in the middle, which has elements of things that were taken away from people to dehumanize them when they were put into these camps. So the whole piece is very visual, and it has to do a lot with, like I said, dehumanizing and sort of the decline of society as we know it, pretty much.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you did that in reaction to what's happening in the United States, because when I look at it, I remember there was a lot of very tough rhetoric happening in the Bahamas just last year about people of descent other than what is perceived as being like 100% Bahamian, whatever that means, because again, like many of our founding fathers and the first black man to sit in parliament was actually of Haitian descent. And of course we have people like from the Greek islands and from, you know, various different parts of Europe and from various different parts of Africa that many of whom came via other Caribbean countries or via the United States, or I mean, not everyone just came direct from Africa on a boat and landed here. So it's you know, it's very difficult to say, like, you know, what that is. So and when that was happening, my husband is in fact German, as you guys know, sitting here at the table, and I remember some of the things being said and things that were in the paper or that were on the radio. He just said, oh my gosh, like, that's what Hitler said in 1928.
Exactly.
You know, like word for word. Like word for word, you know? And so we were having that conversation before, not even about Trump, but just about kind of a global, you know, this kind of language. If you go back, and what's very interesting too, and I think a lot of people don't realize this, is people learn about the Holocaust mostly through what happened to the Jewish population.
Exactly.
And so they think that that's what it was. But actually, if you look at history, it started as an economic situation.
Yes, it did.
And it started with disgruntled people who felt that their greatness in the world had declined and that they didn't have the economic power they used to have. The sanctions from World War One that were put on Germany were, you know, very strenuous. And it was this feeling of like, this isn't fair. You know, we used to be a superpower and we're not anymore. And we have to find an enemy. And let's pick on the Jews.
Exactly.
So, and I think that's what's really interesting. And so I find your piece is, you know, very apropos, not only, even though you've got this kind of a medallion of Trump sort of hanging around the neck.
I did. And you know what's interesting is that a few people have been to see the piece, and every time the person went, and then they would tell me that someone had actually closed the locket.
Oh, interesting.
I know. And so I thought, oh, wow, either they really hate Trump or they think he's fabulous, and how could I do something like that? But I thought it was interesting that I got some kind of reaction from that.
They touched your work.
They touched my work, too, which I don't really like, but anyway.
But still, but it's an interesting reaction.
It happens, you know. But I did want to do it because it shows what happens when people like Trump, and they prey on people's fears and their hate, and it sort of appeals to people who are disgruntled, you know, like Hitler, and it happens very slowly, and it's a slippery slope into something like that. And I sort of wanted to make that statement that, you know, the nasty rhetoric or whatever, it does appeal to people who...
Well, it does, and I think, again, if you look, you know, not to single, again, one person, even though you have the locket of Trump, you know, not to single one person out, if you look globally, it happens. It happens in Africa between tribes, right?
Definitely.
I mean, there's tribal warfare where one tribe is seen as being the vermin and the dirty wife raping, what, blah, blah, blah. I mean, and it's always like the same kind of, and it generally leads to massacres and wars and some kind of, you know, and it happens in, you know, it's happening in the, in between Russia and Ukraine, right?
That there's, it does.
Right? Yeah. There's this ideology that somehow one strain of ethnicity or nationality is somehow better than another.
Yeah.
And that is used to pump up people's feelings of when they feel they have no self-worth.
Right, they already feel disenfranchised.
So, exactly. So you talk to a disenfranchised group of people that feel like, you know, there's no jobs, there's no money, there's whatever. How can you make those people feel better? Make them feel better than someone else.
Of course.
So, and that's the...
That's it. That's the key to it.
The key to, the go-to.
And people fall into that, you know, because people at some point are vulnerable and they like that kind of rhetoric. And unfortunately, it does not lead to anything good. And that's kind of what I wanted to portray in the piece. And, you know, a lot of people were very moved in different ways by it, which I was glad.
Positive and negative?
Mostly positive. I had a lot of people actually sort of cry or weep, and that was kind of interesting, and you know, so.
And how do you gather? I mean, that material must be quite difficult to deal with. So, gathering it, where do you gather it from, and how do you, as you know, an artist, just having to go in and like look at that material all day long? Do you need to take breaks from that and go away and kind of
all day long? I mean, I chose my images very carefully. It was sort of like months trying to figure out what I wanted to put on it. It, it was not a haphazard decision. You know, I would just go through images and images of the Holocaust, you know, camps and the prisoners, and you know, it's all horrific. But I kind of I mean I grew up with that kind of, you know, because culturally that's what we learned being Jewish. I grew up with that, and it took a while to sort of pick out important images that would sort of get my point across. I mean, there were tons of them everywhere. I could have put 1,000 images on them. So I really had to sort of narrow it down. But it was,
I mean,
it was
how
difficult.
Do you do that? I mean,
it was difficult. It was difficult. I mean, one's as bad as the next. And I tried to portray different, you know, different levels. And, you know, there's a picture of Hitler in there, and there's a picture of, you know, children and different quotes I have from Elie Wiesel and different people. And so, you know, I was hoping that people really went up close and looked at it and maybe read the little quotes I had and, mm-hmm. you know, really looked at the elements in it.
And did you mostly get that from physical material that you had, or did you go online to look for that? Or
a lot of that was online, mm-hmm. yeah, because, I mean, you can find everything online.
Yeah, sure.
You know? Right.
And is it printed on any particular kind of paper? Are you thinking about longevity when you're creating the piece as well, in terms of like how that's going to survive?
That one I did. Those pieces are actually photo transfers. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And what I did to make them look old is I just stained them mm-hmm. and ripped them up and kind of, you know, made them look threadbare. Mm-hmm. So they look like they were old and sort of tattered. Mm. And then just stuck them on with pins.
Yeah. No, I just think it's quite interesting because, you know, there's a lot of younger artists now that are so used to the image, right? So they're Instagram and everything's digital. And so very often I find not a lot of thought is put into the actual material that's going to be produced in.
Yeah.
Because the focus on the image itself is so mm-hmm. strong that, you know, it'll just get printed on, you know, copy paper. It'll get printed on,
exactly.
you know, whatever. Yeah. And you're like, okay, that's not going to last more than about 6 months.
Exactly, before it
turns
yellow.
So I just think I that's why I wanted to ask that question. Like, you know, that you thought through that process of, like, mm-hmm. what the media was that you're actually going to print those images out on and how important that is for any young artist listening to really think that through. And scale and things like that, I find are quite interesting now.
Yeah, so, I mean, especially when you're doing three-dimensional work or you're doing mm-hmm. collage, you always have to be really aware of what material you're printing your things on, mm-hmm. because you do want it to last. And mm-hmm. you know, if somebody, you know, has it in their home, you don't want it to, like, you know.
Yeah, and in this environment, which is so difficult for paper to thrive in,
it is.
So, interesting. I was actually just also talking to my husband about that piece because, you know, in Germany, it's illegal to show the swastika.
Mm-hmm.
And it's illegal to have a lot of that imagery at all. So, but there are actually laws written that if it's an artwork or if it's then it's sanctioned.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was quite interesting because I just said to him, I was like, you know, if we took this on a traveling show, like, would we be able to display it? Because the swastika is totally, it's like you can't. You just can't show it.
Well, my idea was I would really I would like this piece to sort of go into maybe a small Jewish museum somewhere. Just, you know, I donate.
Actually, there's one in Florida that
that
I'm in touch with, so maybe we can make that happen.
That would be fabulous. Yeah, I don't want to take it home, Amanda.
I can get. So that needs to be in an institution for sure.
Yeah, I'd love other people to see it. So that's kind of
Maybe we can make that happen. So we have been listening to Sue Katz Lightborn speaking about her piece Remember, which is currently on show at the National Art Gallery in the main location of Villa Doyle, as part of the National Exhibition. And you can come and see that with many other works at the National Art Gallery really any day of the week except Monday, because we're open every day, Tuesday to Saturday we're open 10 to 5, and on Sunday we're open from noon to 5. Please remember the National Art Gallery is free for children under 12. So, you know, I'm encouraging kids in the neighborhood, come on over after school. It's nice and air conditioned. You can hang out. I might make you do some sort of project, or you can do your homework on the veranda. We have quite a lot of kids coming now, and I love that energy. So send your kids over to us to look at some art and think about different issues that we are trying to talk about in society, both globally and specifically in the Bahamas. We are going to go to a short break, and then you will hear from the last artist that we have with us in the studio tonight, Dee Dee Brown, who is one of the three ladies here with me tonight and also in the National Art Gallery exhibition, NE8. You are listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. You're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio, and with me, your hostess, I guess, Amanda Coulson, director of the National Art Gallery. We're going to be right back after this break.